Mail call!
It's a Mailbag Monday with the Killer Bees.
You've got mail.
It's our Mailbag Monday. What are your questions for the Killer Bees? You can ask us anything you want, sports-related, non-sports-related, whatever. This is your chance to ask the Killer Bees whatever you've been wanting to ask about. 713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. Speaking of the slam dunk contest, and we also talked about Jose Altuve a little bit earlier, someone asking...
He's entering?
The slam dunk contest? Yeah. I don't believe so. Oh. Although he's probably the same height as Mac McClung. Can Jose Altuve dunk on a 10-foot goal?
No.
You don't think? He's an athlete.
No,
superior athlete.
Doesn't matter.
He's a Hall of Fame baseball player.
I don't think he's ever been known for his hops, no matter what. No.
Yeah, I don't think he can even come close.
That's like asking Mac McClung, can you hit 30 home runs in the major leagues or can you hit a home run in the major league?
Well, hitting a baseball is harder than dunking.
How low do you have to lower?
I was thinking he couldn't even dunk a 9-foot goal.
Yeah, I was thinking 8.
I think 8-foot might be pushing it.
Like he's not. I think he can dunk 8. He can dunk 8.
I don't know.
But he can dunk. But it's got to be, what is it? Is it harder to dunk one-handed or two-handed?
Probably two. Well, it depends on your size
harder
of your hands.
To dunk two-handed.
Depends on the size of your hands,
so
though.
He's going to be a two-handed dunker.
Yeah, but still, with, you can get extended reach out of one arm, whereas with two, you have to.
Yeah.
It was always easier for me to dunk with one hand.
And he's going to be a two-handed, most likely.
Well, on 8-foot goals.
Oh.
We would always play. We would play full court on 8-foot goals, like at the high school, middle school.
I would think
you
just throw it off the backboard, so you don't have to palm it.
I have big, long hands. I can palm a basketball.
That's right, Cody.
I can palm a basketball.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think he can dunk. I think he can dunk 8. I used to dunk 8. I think Altuve can dunk 8.
Well, then I guarantee he can dunk 8.
He can dunk 8. Now, yeah. I have a few inches on Altuve, though.
True.
How tall is Altuve?
Where?
He's listed at 5'6", so he's probably really 5'4".
No.
Talking about height?
Yeah. What else would I be talking about? What else is 5'4"?
There's a lot of measurements when you say I got a couple inches on Altuve.
But I said 5'4". Where could he have been
5'4"? I didn't hear the 5'4" part. I just said, when you just made the comment, generally, I got a few inches on Altuve. Well, yeah. You know.
I don't lie about my height. I'm 5'6".
Okay.
And I think last time I was near him, it looked like we were eye to eye.
So he's 5'6"?
I think it's like, I guess I'm like 5'5", 5'6", somewhere in that range.
I thought you said you just didn't lie about your age, and now you're giving yourself
so you can't,
half
you can't
an inch.
Dunk on an 8-footer, can you?
Dude, I probably couldn't get a 6.5-footer.
That's what I thought, yeah.
At this point.
How about those little Tykes goals? Could you throw down a couple on that, even if you raise it up to the highest?
Yeah, just bought one.
I like having you around, because I can make short jokes
know,
that I've been hearing for my entire life.
Yeah.
713-780-ESPN. What are your questions for the Killer Bees? 713-780-3776. Can Tiger win again?
Well, define win. I think he
win. Tournament.
I think he could win a tournament.
What do you mean define win?
Well, because I think that some people just think, can he win another major to get closer to Jack as opposed to can you win a tournament? Look, he showed with making the cut and what he did after the cut for short glimpses, he still has the ability. But the fact that he doesn't have the desire, the fact that he's just going to play the majors and a few other tournaments, and he also physically doesn't have the makeup, like I think that if they shortened it to a 2-day tournament, yes, he could win a tournament. The fact that now with the 4 rounds and where his health is at, unfortunately, I'm going to say, and I've been one of the staunchest supporters, he was going to win another one. I said that before he won the Masters. Since he won the Masters and then had the car crash, I don't think he wins another tournament.
I don't think he wins another tournament either. Like you said, he's only going to play in the majors in a select few events. So we're looking at maybe 7 events, 8 events a year, tops, like
he'll
absolute
play
tops.
The LA tournament, because it's his.
Uh-huh.
He'll play the one on the East Coast in DC that's his. And he maybe one or two more.
The only chance he has is Augusta and some of the British Open courses if the wind gets nasty. Like the weather gets nasty and it equalizes the field. That's the only chance. Augusta,
but the wind kills
British
him from
Open.
A walking perspective.
What?
Like he's fighting the elements. He could slip. He's fighting other things that put strain on his legs than just hitting golf shots. That's what bothers me. Because I said all along that not only was he going to win another major, he was going to win Augusta. Because Augusta, if you know the course makeup, if you know where to hit every shot, length has nothing to do with it, though they've tried to lengthen the course. If you just know strategically where to place every shot and where those greens are, you can win, and this is why Bernard Langer and Freddie Couples and those guys, no matter how old they are, they're always competitive there. That's why I thought he had a huge advantage. He used to have an advantage with length, but he could play links golf really well. I just think that leg, I can't see it holding up with slippery conditions and the bunkers and everything else.
Is the wind going to affect his walking?
If you said it's like 20-some miles, I think it can.
Maybe.
It can be taxing on a bad leg if you're fighting. We've seen it enough to where you walk through windy conditions where you got to kind of lean forward more. And with that leg not looking near 100%, I'm sure it could affect his leg.
2 weeks, I would have mocked this more, but ever since I sprained my ankle, I feel like I'm 80.
You walk like you're 80.
713-780-ESPN, our HRMP listener line. What's your question for the Killer Bees on a Mailbag Monday? I guess we'll allow one for Joe George. Not Santa says, Joe George, do you prefer to do a show with Andrew Carlson or the Killer Bees?
Killer Bees.
There you go.
And smart answer,
against,
Joe.
That's nothing against Andrew. We've only done one show together. Yeah, also,
we like to talk a lot.
We've only done a few more than one.
We're getting close to like 20.
Well, if you'd show up every day.
Stop. You're the worst.
Do you have Chicago Bears underwear?
No.
Not anymore or no?
I don't think I ever did.
Okay.
What were you about to say?
You guys are the worst.
But you picked us.
Well, yeah, because I like working with you guys.
Oh.
I came to the station for a reason. It was part of it.
I thought it's because they gave you a lot more money in assistant director or whatever it's called, AD.
That helped, too.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, yeah. I liked working with you guys. Okay. I missed you, Jeremy.
713-780-ESPN. HRP listener line. What's your question for the Killer Bees? 713-780-3776. 1296 has, to me, like one of the old, like age-old debates, especially in this state. Mexican food or barbecue?
Well, it's easy for me. Mexican food and harpy.
Why is that so easy for you?
It just is because, I mean, obviously because of my wife and her heritage, but also because of the fact that I love fajitas and I love the beans and the rice.
Do you put
and
ketchup
the queso.
On all that?
No. And I just, as much as I like barbecue, I love Mexican food.
One, it's probably Tex-Mex, not Mexican. I'll take you down to Mexico someday. We get a little bit of chival, if you'd like. Anyways, this one's tough for me because I love both of these. These are both on like my top three. Like, if I'm dying, what am I going to eat? Mexican food, barbecue, and then like a good steak, maybe a little surf and turf. Those are my top three by far. This is probably going to depend on my mood because there's sometimes when I'm just like, okay, I want to go have some chips and salsa. I want to have some fajitas. I want to get down with a little bit of margaritas where it's like, okay, Mexican food's my go-to. There's other times whenever I want to go hang out at 6 a.m. at Franklin's in Austin and wait for that brisket that's top-notch, maybe the best bite of food that you'll ever have. I crave the Mexican food more than I crave the barbecue, but both are unbelievable options.
You show up at 6 a.m. to get in a line. When do you get your food?
Probably around 11 or so. I can't remember when Franklin's open.
That's crazy.
No flipping way am I waiting 5 hours for a meal.
I'll find someone else to do it and pay him to do it.
I don't mind doing it because this was back whenever I was the voice of the Dynamo and on the way to becoming the best play-by-play broadcaster in the city of Houston, as voted on by the Houston Press. And I brought a lawn chair in my MiFi block, and I actually prepped during that time. So like I made my time efficient.
You multitasked well, huh?
I multitasked, and then I got that Franklin's brisket, which again, I think that was the best bite of food I've ever had in my life.
Wow! Like I can't even tell you what the best bite of food I've ever had in my life is, but the fact that you categorize it that quickly like that means it must have been pretty good for
so
you.
So good. Killen's beef rib, I would put in that near that
so
same
good.
Conversation. But
so
the last
good.
Time I went, I was very disappointed.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, Ronnie Killen, you better start sending some over here so you can change his opinion back.
Like that used to be that their beef rib, Franklin's brisket were my two favorite bites in barbecue. I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt the last time that I went because I've had it multiple times and it's unbelievable. Those are my two favorite bites. One of my other favorite bites is the charred grilled oysters from Acme Oyster House. Unbelievable how good those are. So good.
Really?
Man, I love them.
They're not really to Joel.
I don't love raw oysters. Like, I'll eat raw oysters, but I don't love raw oysters. But those charred grilled oysters, unbelievable.
Yeah, I love raw oysters.
Unbelievable how good they are. Ocho, do you guys watch the mayor of Kingstown? If not, off yourselves.
Thanks, Ocho.
I guess we're all dead.
Do y'all watch that?
No.
I've been looking for a show to start because I'm caught up with all
the
other ones.
Well, now you have peer pressure.
Did you watch Last of Us yet?
No. I don't think I love the setting of Last of Us.
Because it's zombies?
Yeah. I don't do fake.
I'm with him on that.
Okay.
I don't do fake. The Last of Us just doesn't stick out to me. I've heard good things, but it doesn't stick out to me. All of our shows are like we're caught up on, like Yellowstone. They have like a mid-season break. I think the Apple shows are coming out in a few months. So we actually started a new one yesterday, which is one that's been stored up on the queue that we're way behind on. We started Better Call Saul last night.
I've heard good things.
You know, it's funny. When they paused during the pandemic, it's like the one show that when it came back, I didn't catch up on. So I've watched almost all of it except the last season.
What is Mayor of Kinstown on? I can't figure it out. It's got Jeremy Renner in it. It's on Paramount.
Yeah.
I might give this a shot. I like Jeremy Renner. He almost died.
Yeah, he just had a really bad car accident, right?
It was a snowmobile accident.
He was trying to save somebody else, and then he got run over or something?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it was like his nephew, maybe.
He broke like 30-some bones and had multiple surgeries and all this stuff.
And great first name. Is Dana Brown going to cause issues for the Astros because of how much info he is putting out there? He sure seems to share a lot more than previous GMs.
At this point, I did have some concerns with him not having to say the way he said that he wants Altuve to be an Astro for his whole career. But at this point, I would say no. That, I mean, money talks anyway, but, you know, everybody has their own set of parameters and goals that they're after when they're in a negotiation. We'll see, but I'm not so worried about it yet.
I think it's smart. I really do. I don't think it ultimately impacts how much a player signs for. Like, the number is the number. Like, the number is going to, the number that you need to meet is the number you need to meet. And if you get there, you get there. If you don't, you don't. I think it puts the onus on the player and the agent. Whereas, like, Gerrit Cole, it seemed like he walked for free. George Springer, it seems like he walked without any sort of effort. Carlos Correa, it seemed like he left without any sort of effort. Now we're like Dana Brown saying, oh, yeah, we're trying with Tucker. We're trying with Fromber. We're trying with Bregman and Altuve. If one or two of those guys leave, the angst isn't going to be directed at Dana Brown and the Astros. The angst is going to be directed at, like, you know, when Carlos Beltran left for the Mets. We're like, oh, he's greedy. He wants too much money. He wasn't loyal. I think it flips the script. I actually kind of like it. Because I had my reservations too. I was like, okay, this kind of puts the Astros over the barrel.
Yeah.
But if you're a $100 million player, you're going to sign for $100 million. I think it's kind of smart
but we don't know whether they're going to be $100 million. That's the thing. You don't know they're going to be $100 million players in the next 2 years. And now you've basically committed that they should retire as Astros. Boris is going to come at him with that.
Maybe. I think Jose Altuve is going to tell Boris, I want to be an Astro forever, get it done. So it depends on the player. Like, again, I think you're putting the onus on the player. All right, that's our Mailbag Monday. We do it each and every Monday. If you didn't get your question asked today, it's probably because it wasn't very good, and you can try again next week. We're speaking of the Astros. We've been counting down till Astros opening day with our Houston Astros countdown. Only 28 shows till opening day. Who wins the center field battle? And speaking of Dana Brown, how about his comments challenging Drew Gilbert, the Astros' first-round draft pick last year? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Take the day off work like me and play a fun round of golf with your favorite sports station at the ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 Occasional Invitational presented by SiteJab.com, benefiting Kids Mills. This year's tournament will take place Wednesday, March 8th, 10:30 a.m. at Wildcat Golf Club. Each golfer will receive beverages from Carbach Brewing Company, lunch, dinner, 18 holes of golf, and a quick award ceremony, depending on who's emceeing, immediately after the tournament. Register now at ESPN975.com. Also, programming note, I'm excited for Thursday when I pay off my bet that I owe to
Wrong,
Joel.
Wrong, false, does not count.
We're going to Frankie's Italian Kitchen on Thursday. We'll be there until 7 o'clock, noon to 7. Killer Bees broadcasting there. Will House will be broadcasting after us. Come out to Frankie's Italian Kitchen and hang out. I can't wait because those wings, remember he brought in, Chris brought in those wings? Yeah. Unbelievable.
And the pizza oven, the crust is perfect on the pizzas, and then just all the straight Italian food dishes are phenomenal. So to get you guys to sample it, oh, Joe, that's right, you won't be there. But everybody else to sample it, it's absolutely the best Italian food I've tasted in the area.
Yeah, it's really good. I enjoyed it the time that I had it. 2158, Killer Bees, Jeremy Renner got ran over by a snowplow. It sounds like a Christmas song.
I was going to say, Renner got run over by a snowmobile.
He said he was using to remove snow around his Tahoe home. Whenever he got out of the plow, it started to roll backwards and rolled over him. I thought that there was in the path of the snowmobile, and he, like...
Okay, so I think you're getting Jeremy Renner... his story and Peyton Hillis's stories.
No, that's not true either.
It's different. I could have sworn that I read Jeremy Renner was trying to get his kid out of the way. Now, it could have been false. I could have read the wrong thing, but there's no way I confuse Jeremy Renner in
snowplow with
Hillis in the beach, in the water, in the ocean. No, I did not.
Well, he was saving a child.
He saved his kids. He saved his two kids. Yes. Yeah, it says right here, Jeremy Renner was trying to save his adult nephew. Maybe it wasn't a kid. I assume nephew was a kid. Jeremy Renner was trying to save his adult nephew from being hit by his snowplow when the machine accidentally crushed the famed Avengers star.
Yep, on New Year's Day.
So, no, I was not confusing anything,
Joe George. Just asking.
Yeah, you need to walk that one back, like Homer said.
Or just walk back out of the production room down the hall and have another meeting, because we do just fine.
Yeah, what would you have done if one of us cussed?
I trust you guys not to do that.
I've been dumped twice. How many times have you been dumped?
Probably at least that.
There you go.
Since this show started?
I've never been dumped.
No, in our history.
No. Okay. I've been dumped in this studio once, long time ago.
It's like you're acting like you need to be on the hot and ready for this. You guys have been in the business for a long time.
I'm just saying.
I'm still on zero.
We don't have a dump button in here. We can't do it.
Yeah, that is. I don't like that.
Big C's trying to get us to talk about the XFL. He's trying really hard to get us to talk about the XFL.
He was trying so hard that he was texting me pictures of Paul Gallant's shoes standing on the sideline for the game, saying how uncomfortable he looked with them on. And I was like, oh, that's right. I didn't even realize the Roughnecks were playing, and you're there. So he tried hard in a lot of ways.
Yeah. Did y'all watch much of the XFL this weekend?
No.
I watched the second half and the fourth quarter of the Roughnecks game.
I saw highlights.
And then when the All-Star game got bad last night, I watched a little of that Seattle game.
I can't do it, man.
Oh, your boy's playing.
Alex Myers?
Jared King.
I saw he came off the bench.
Off the bench and got a rushing touchdown.
I mean, I'm pulling for the Roughnecks. There's Cougars all on that team. You got Wade Phillips, go Cougs. You got Peyton Pardee coaching receivers. Grandson of Jack Pardee, go Cougs. You got Alex Myers playing in the secondary, go Cougs. I just can't do it. There's too much going on right now.
I don't think you have to Texas say go
legend Duke Ejiofor.
Duke Ejiofor?
Yeah, he got hurt, though. I saw.
That's been his problem of why he wasn't in the league.
I saw Josh Gordon score a touchdown.
Josh Gordon's in the
XFL?
Is
he in the league?
Yeah, he's on the
Flash?
The Dragons.
Really?
Seattle's team?
He caught a touchdown from Ben DiNucci, the former Cowboys quarterback.
Are they not testing in the XFL?
Maybe not.
Boy.
That's good. That's great for him.
It's just weed.
Are you sure?
No.
All right, then.
He's about as sure as he was with confusing Peyton Hillis and Jeremy Renner.
Yeah, wow.
All right, let's get to the Astros opening day countdown. You know, there's only 28 shows till opening day. I cannot wait.
No, that was miscorrecting. Roger Clemens misremembered? He miscorrected us.
He did miscorrect us.
That's brutal.
Yeah, he came in, he fact-checked us like Stat Boy on Pardon the Interruption around
maybe.
The horn, or it was PTI. Yeah, the maybe doesn't disqualify how wrong
really
you are.
I don't think really maybe you did. I think and you were pretty adamant that we were wrong.
No, the texters were adamant you were wrong, and I was saying maybe you're
getting
them confused.
Did you get the text line in there?
I just got it.
Oh.
Hey, welcome to the times. Thanks for catching up.
Here's the thing. I get everyone wants to have like two-factor authentication for things. How much of a pain in the ass it's been for me since I got this job?
To do what?
Text line?
To get into anything.
Produce the
Killer
Bees?
To show up 5 days a week?
You guys are fine. I'm here
to show up all 5 days in a week?
The last time I missed your show, I was still worked that day.
That doesn't count.
It's like a half day.
What were you doing that day? Oh, you were doing the Big E.
Yeah, I had my son with me.
That's right. That's right.
And I want him
you were half babysitting, playing father, and half-assing your job.
And you left one day at 12:42 or 2:42.
Yes, I had to leave.
We never do that. Killer Bees never do that.
That's
leave
fake
early.
News.
It is fake news, right?
We did that both time. Of us, by the way.
It happened like last week.
Yeah, I do it a lot during football season to catch flights. So, yeah, that's the norm.
I do it a lot to get the girls on time to catch missed. Not to avoid fights. So, yes.
Well, fights with who?
The wife.
Oh, Todd, the show said texters are stupid. Texters, response, 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776.
Show listener crime.
Ooh, Chewy. Chewy's dropping words on the Twitch. I'm not sure I can repeat on the radio, especially if Joe George's not in the production room. I don't know if I can do that. All right, baseball season's right around the corner. Michael Brantley was taking ground balls at first base the other day, and everybody lost their mind. Although, want a hot take?
Sure.
It's not great for Jiner Diaz.
Yeah, I'm not expecting a lot of Jiner Diaz this year.
Well, if he's the backup catcher, he's going to start 50 games.
If Butts Candy's nuts, I don't think he's going to be.
You have
Corey Lee or a trade.
Which of the two rookies do you think make the team before? You're just saying,
between
if not
Lee,
a trade,
Lee and Diaz?
Yeah.
I mean, I think the versatility gives Diaz an upper hand, but I think, and his bat is better than Corey Lee's, but I think that if they don't go out and acquire a veteran backup catcher, I think Corey Lee's a better catcher, and that's why he'll be the backup catcher.
You weren't willing to bet on that bet, though.
So?
To bet on the, like Joe was. Joe was. Joe did, stood on the table for a trade for a backup catcher. I think that it's possible they trade for a backup catcher this year. I don't think it'd be for opening day. I think it would happen, you know, in the summer. Especially if Martin Maldonado's not doing very well. All right, here's the question for today. Our Astros opening day countdown, just 28 shows till opening day. Who wins the center field battle, assuming there's going to be a center field battle? And Dusty Baker said that he's going to give both guys an opportunity.
Just based on what I saw at the end of the year and the fact that we said, look, it's one thing to say that Jake Meyers was gun-shy in the outfield because of all that he had been through. One, from diving, and every time he dove, he was checking his rotator cuffs and his shoulders. And then to be scared of the warning track in the wall because of colliding with the wall. It's another thing to look just how completely out of place he was at the plate at the end of the year. He's got to show a whole hell of a lot in a short period of time. And in spring training, I don't know, no matter how many at-bats he gets, that he's going to do that. I think Dusty is making sure that he's setting it up right now so Chaz can't relax, and he's got to keep making sure that he's on a daily basis doing the things he needs to do. But I think Chaz is going to be the guy. And I think that, you know, the mentality has changed now that James Click is gone, because James Click was the guy that constantly was adamant about who the center fielder of the future was, and it was Jake. I think Dusty was the last guy that Chaz had to win over. He eventually did that in the playoffs at Chandler Rome. And now you've got a guy that looks like he's ripe to be the starting center fielder for this team. So I think Chaz wins the battle.
713-780-ESPN. Who's the Astros opening day starting center fielder? 713-780-3776. The HRMP listener line. I might counterpoint that. Also, okay. How about Dana Brown talking about Drew Gilbert? Did he mean anything by challenging him a little bit to compete for the Houston Astros? We'll take a listen to that. Whenever we come back. 713-780-3776. But before we do that, we got to give away some things. It's the favorite part of many of our listeners are here on the Killer Bees when we give things away. The Houston Fishing Show is back, and we'll be hosting the 48th annual event March 1st through 5th. Everything for the fishermen. All the rods, reels, and lures. Factory reps, guides from Alaska to South America, and a kids clinic on Saturday and Sunday with giveaways. If you love to fish or just want to learn about fishing, don't miss the 48th annual fishing show. Check out HoustonFishing.com. For more information, that's HoustonFishingShow.com, HoustonFishingShow.com for more information. Giving away tickets right now to caller number 10, 713-780-ESPN, caller number 10, 713-780-3776. You're on your way to the Houston Fishing Show. For more information, check out HoustonFishingShow.com. Who's the Astros opening day center fielder? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Informed opinions are always presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
I agree with you that Chaz McCormick's going to be the opening day starter. I think Jake Meyers is the more talented player of the two. He has a lot of questions that he needs to answer. I think that we've seen... I mean, it's not prime Jake Meyers because he was only 25 a couple of years ago. But Jake Meyers in 2021, better than we've seen from Chaz McCormick. Like, he's a better defensive outfielder. I think he has a better bat when everything's, you know, rolling. And this isn't like to besmirk Chaz McCormick, who I think Chaz McCormick can be a 20-25 home run type of hitter. Plays a solid center field. Obviously had the great catch in Philly. That's one of the most iconic moments in Houston Astro playoff history. I think at their best, between Jake Meyers and Chaz McCormick, and can Jake Meyers ever even be his best, coming off the shoulder surgery, tentative in the outfield, things like that. But at their best, I think Jake Meyers has more potential than Chaz McCormick.
I think he had it. I think you're right. I think that's what I was going to go to. We're not having this discussion in terms of the next 3 to 5 years. We're having it for who's going to win the job this year. And I think this year, coming out of spring training, I think Chaz is going to win the job. Now, before the injury, do I think that there was more potential and more talent in Jake than there was for Chaz? Absolutely. And I think that he was, you know, a very toolsy player. We knew that he was a very, very good defensive outfielder. But we knew that when he first came on the scene and made it to the big leagues, he had some pop. And he could hit, and he played, you know, the way you want to play the game of baseball, both offensively and defensively, to where I'd say, absolutely, when they were both coming in through and moving up the system, Jake before Chaz. Now, coming off the injury, I don't have the same kind of confidence because I don't know if we're ever going to see that same Jake again.
Yeah, I think it's a fair question. Like, shoulder injuries aren't easy to come back from. Now, Jake Meyer's torn labrum. Michael Brantley also had the shoulder surgery, so, and he's at an advanced age. So that's kind of like some hesitation with what to expect from Michael Brantley this year as well.
But the other thing is the mental part of it, right? Because we all know that some people have a mental block they just can't get over. Uh-huh. If he has that mental block now in the outfield, whether it's, oh, God, I got to dive, am I going to screw my shoulder up again? Or I don't want to, I feel the warning track. I don't want to go up and now you take away a lot because now he's not the defensive outfielder we thought he could be, that he showed us a lot that he was when he first got called up. And so then now his value goes down.
Yeah. He has to be able to overcome the physical and the mental part of the injury. And I think both of them are easier said than done. I think whenever you have a shoulder injury, it's very difficult, especially for like a hitter. Now, it's weird that he was so good in Sugar Land last year and then was awful in the bigs. Mm-hmm. I think there was an element of him pressing. I think he felt that he had to perform quickly or he wasn't going to play.
All eyes are upon him. There's a job that could be still won for him. And you know, and he just looked overmatched at the plate.
He did. Like, he's got to be able to... I think he's physically fit. I don't think that he would have went to Sugar Land last year and like, be able to produce at the level that he produced if he wasn't physically fit.
Well, you and I had talked about it. We said, look, at a certain point, if he's still coming back from the injury, shut it down. And we thought he was going to. And then not only did he not, but he made it a decision that they had to make for the playoff roster.
Yeah. And he made the playoff roster, at least in the opening, the first round. And then he was abysmal in the only start that he got. And it was like, okay, we don't trust Jake Meyers anymore. But I think he's physically fit. To me, it's the whole, like, he knew he had to produce quickly, or he was not going to get a whole lot of run. He wasn't going to play a whole lot. He wasn't going to get a lot of at-bats, things like that. I think that he is a better talent than Chaz McCormick. I think Chaz McCormick's a better player right now today. I think that if Chaz struggles and Jake can produce in his short, you know, in few, like, opportunities, then I think he could surpass Chaz McCormick. I also think that they're both going to play a lot at the same time. Because I don't think Yordan's going to play in left field every day. If it's a 50-50 split, then that's going to allow one of those guys to play left field if Michael Brantley's not playing a ton. And we've seen Michael Brantley also kind of get talked about in the sense of, like, he's going to ease his way back in. I don't think he's going to play a ton of first base, even though he was taking ground balls at first base. Dusty's like, don't read too much into that. I think that's more of an emergency. Like, if Jose Abreu goes down, they want to give him a day off. Like, I'd be shocked if Brantley plays more than 10 games at first base.
I agree with that. I think as it relates to center field, too, I think that Jake's going to be on the roster. I think that Jake, look, two things can be true. He's not going to be the starting center fielder right away coming out of spring training. But he could make the roster. And on top of that, he could correct one thing versus all of the things and be the defensive replacement in center field for late innings better than Dubon. I think that his skill set that he brings to the table defensively, as long as he's healthy and that he can get over the mental block, he's a better center fielder than Dubon, in my opinion. And so he could be the defensive replacement in center field before he ever gets in the batter's box again. But if he continues to improve and he's healthy at the plate, that'd be a huge bonus.
Yeah. King of Twitch agrees with you. He had better talent than Meyers versus Chaz. Look, I think that I think physically he's fine. Is there a mental block there? Yeah. Last year, I agree with that. There was a mental block in place last year. Does that continue into this season? You would hope not, because I think he is your more talented center fielder. Someone who might be talented than both of them, more talented than both of them, is Drew Gilbert, the first rounder they took last year out of Tennessee. Dana Brown had some comments about Drew Gilbert. Like, and I'm curious, is there something here? Is there a message being sent from Dana Brown to Drew Gilbert? Take a listen.
I'm challenging Gilbert right now, who was like the top pick in the draft last year, first rounder. I'm challenging him that, hey, get ready, because we believe in young players. And, you know, so I think he's a guy that, you know, could come up and play center field. You know, he's got to get the work.
There you go. Very windy in West Palm Beach, Florida. Do you think he was sending a message there?
The only message is that you got a chance here, that the window is open for you to seize the moment, that if you keep busting your ass and show that, you know, you're dedicated, committed, you come in shape, you're ready to play, and that if you show any signs at all that you're really doing it at a lower level, we're going to expedite your trip to the major leagues because we need someone that can play backup center field or more.
Did you take something out of this, George?
I also think it's like, you. Not only that, it's, hey, man, why don't you come get that paycheck? Like, this is Michael Harris.
Yeah.
This is what the Braves just do. This is what the Braves do. They challenge their guys, they bring them up, and then they lock them up. And I think that's kind of the message he's sending here is, look, you're drafted to this team for a reason. Go out there, ball out. You come up, you contribute like a Michael Harris did in Atlanta. Not only are you going to be a starting center fielder, you're going to get paid.
See, I don't see the financial aspect of that. I see the work ethic part of that to where, hey, look, if you and I haven't had many conversations and I'm the new general manager here, I believe in young talent. And I believe that we have an opening at center field that whether it's a backup or eventual starter, if you bust your ass and play your cards right, you could be here sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I don't think he was nothing I've heard from Gilbert is that like he doesn't work. Like he's not a hard worker. If anything, it's the opposite.
Ass.
Like he's a baseball rat. He's always at the ballpark. It's like everything I've heard about
Gilbert. Bregman in center field.
Yeah.
So like I don't think this was Dana Brown like putting that into question or being like, hey, you know, you got to work harder. I think it was more to what Joe said of like, hey, we see you as the future center fielder of this team. You might not think it's as soon as we think it could potentially be, but put in the work. Take a look at Atlanta's roster. Michael Harris is a name that sticks out. Vaughn Grissom, who very well could be the starting shortstop for the Braves this year. Spencer Strider, who last year was like outside of the rotation, and then by a couple months in, he's one of the best pitchers in the National League. I think that was Dana Brown not only talking to Drew Gilbert, but talking to all of the minor leaguers that, hey, under my watch, minor leaguers are going to advance quickly in our system. We believe in your talent. Show us how talented you are, and you could be on this Astros 26-man roster sooner than you and probably anybody else thinks.
Let's be clear. I don't think that he's telling him to stay in shape or work harder that regard. I think it's basically a wake-up call that, hey, whether you thought this previously or not, you could be in the major leagues really quickly if you just prove yourself a little bit along the way.
Yeah, I think that that's something that could certainly be the case. And I like Drew Gilbert. Like, it's way too early to start, like, draw comparisons on Gilbert and things like that. But watch.
There's a lot of people that thought that he got drafted because he was on the number one team in the country that got some publicity, and he was that scrappy, celebrate the home run, paint the face up kind of guy. But I think that they didn't look hard enough in terms of the skill set and what he brought to the table as a guy that could play defensive outfield and had some pop and could play baseball.
Yeah. King of Twitch, how's Pedro Leon looking? I don't know if he's playing yet. He has sports hernia surgery, right? He's still going to be out for a good amount of time. The texters and the Twitchers are going to war.
Ooh, boy, aren't they?
Coug Blaze says, I bet the texters send inappropriate picks back and forth to each other. The texters are calling the Twitchers. One of them said, I agree with Todd. Texters suck. The other one, Cleveland from Cincinnati, said, sorry, Todd, the show. Us texters have real careers, which limit our access to the bees. At least we still find time to listen and respond while you're in between flipping patties at Whataburger.
Oh, ho, ho.
That's
wow.
The best shot so far.
No
so this
doubt.
Is a war between the texters and the Twitchers.
We're not choosing sides here. We love the support.
I will. The texters are winning. There's no doubt about it.
Okay.
713-780-ESPN. Texters, stop texting mean things to Twitch. 713-780-ESPN. Twitchers, twitch.tv/ESPN975. Stop saying such mean things to the texters. It's the Killer Bees, ESPN97.5, ESPN92.5. Rockets have less than 25 games left this season. Is there anything that can happen in a short time that gives you more hope?
By the way, did you hear Tillman during the Mardi Gras parade this weekend?
We did.
We need to bring that up. Oh, boy.
It's planned. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN97.5 and ESPN92.5.
Razor sharp commentaries delivered with a purpose. You found the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
The Twitchers are winning this war. There's no doubt about it. The Twitchers at twitch.tv/ESPN975 versus the Texters at 713-780-3776, the HRP listener line. Coug Blaze, Twitchers have office jobs and higher positions so we can watch Twitch. King of Twitch, the Texters can't figure out how to load the Twitch app on their flip phone. Texters are out mowing my grass. There's nothing wrong with mowing the grass.
Wow.
Ocho says, is there a betting line on Texters versus Twitchers asking for a degenerate? Right now, it's Twitchers minus like 250, to be completely honest. The Twitchers are dominating this battle.
Ponce's Texters take a knee.
Yeah, I mean, I see it. Houston Dab King, is that Dick Willie? Maybe, I don't know. Texters
got a 1 in 5 shot
out there making deliveries. Waka, they texting in from their Boost Mobile phones.
I'm just happy they're all listening. You're trying to separation of church and state. You're trying to drive a line in the middle of the sand and have them duke it out.
I got to be careful on some of these that I read in the Twitch.
Yeah, you do.
I think I'm going to might end there. But you can keep the insults coming. All we saw on the text line was 0754. Bad word, the Twitch. It escalated quickly. I guess there's a civil war going on in the Killer Bees between the texters and the Twitchers. You alluded to this from Houston Rocket owner Tilman Fertitta. He was at it. Was pretty sure this was the Galveston Mardi Gras.
It was.
And it was on Lisa's station.
KPRC Channel 2.
Frank Billingsley, my favorite weather guy in the world. Love Frank Billingsley.
He is the best in the business at weather.
He's hurricane coverage, Frank Billingsley, nobody else. Anyways, Frank was talking to Tilman. I don't know why Frank was talking to Tilman.
Well, first of all, Frank's like the honorary mayor of Galveston.
That's right. He had a house down there, didn't he?
Yeah.
Sold it?
I don't know if he sold it.
It's on the market.
But he has been, you know, he's like the second son of Galveston. And so as part of the coverage for the parade, he was out and about on the parade route. And Tilman and his family, who promote and are, you know, big supporters of the parade, were all there.
Yeah. Somebody on the text line real quick, just to keep the war going, stoke the fire. 4624, the Twitchers ain't got no life. They want to stare, look at three guys talk on the radio. Losers.
What
are we counting, Joe?
Sometimes people listening isn't enough.
Yeah, I mean, I don't blame anybody. All right, so here was Tilman Fertitta talking to Frank Billingsley, the second mayor of Galveston, about what the Rockets fans should be wishing for.
Pray for Victor.
There you go. If you didn't hear it again, play it one more time, Joe. It was very, very quick, very, very fast from Tilman. He says, "Pray for Victor.
Pray for Victor."
You think he was talking about wins over the next 25 games?
Well, because
victories.
The quote that I was talking about previous in the earlier parts of the conversation, Frank was like, "Hey, go Rockets!" But and yeah. Tilman basically came in and said, "Yeah, thank God we got 10 days off." He was admitting it wasn't a great brand of basketball that anybody should be excited and be watching. So he was pretty down on his squad. Memo to Rafael Stone, pay attention. Your owner ain't happy. And you damn well better hope that you have the luck of the Irish and a whole lot more. Get one of those top two picks. And even still, be on the lookout.
Yeah, Tilman wants Victor. So I guess the Victor versus
Victor.
Victor versus Scoot debate has been had. I guess it's Victor that
Scoot played in the Rising Stars, though. Looks like he's very, very strong and NBA ready body-wise.
Who does he remind you of? Because I have a comp.
I didn't see enough of him to make a true comparison. I'll say this, body type-wise, which was surprising to me, he was closer to Russell Westbrook than I thought.
Really?
Now, I think he shoots the ball better. Look, I saw you make the bitter beer face. I'm not saying about his abilities to shoot the ball.
I meant more size. I don't think he's, like, that big.
I think he's more muscular than I thought.
I do think he's muscular. He's not as tall. What's Russ, 6'5", 6'6"?
Yeah, maybe, but I'm just making the comparison from the NBA-ready body-wise, like strength-wise. I really think that he's he's closer to Russell Westbrook than I thought.
I think he reminds me a lot of Kyrie Irving, if I'm being completely honest. I think that they're very similar in terms
ball
of measurables.
Handling?
Yep, I do.
Really?
I think Kyrie.
Look, take away everything else about Kyrie Irving. I think Kyrie Irving is hands down the best ball handler in the entire league.
Don't disagree. I'm not saying that Scoot right now as a teenager is Kyrie Irving's level, but I see a very similar player in Scoot than I do in Kyrie Irving, where he's somebody who can handle the ball really well, break his defender down on the dribble. I think he's a good enough shooter. And the question that you would have if he's Kyrie is like how much he distributes, like how much he gets his teammate involved, how much of a
true point guard versus NBA, you know, new wave point guard.
I like Scoot a lot. I like Victor a lot too. So
honestly,
Victor,
look,
settle for Scoot.
This is a hot take, but as good as Wembanyama can be in terms of if you're going to keep this roster right now that is currently started to be constructed with Houston, I think that Scoot's a better fit for this roster in terms of a true young point guard that can grow with these guys. But I think that Victor Wembanyama is the transcending franchise player that is Giannis with a better shot.
2128, I'm out here making six figures, keeping your lights on, but you Twitchers keep thinking you are high and mighty from your depressing cubicles.
You're loving
and
this because you love the drama.
It's good. Texters versus Twitchers. 713-780-3776 versus twitch.tv/ESPN975. Rafael Stone, by the way, he doesn't love the Rockets have no plan crowd. In fact, he took offense to that and had a counterpoint to that crowd that the Rockets have no plan. Stone says, and I quote, "If you paid no attention at all, you could say, quote. Hey, these guys don't even have a plan, Stone said. No, we absolutely have a plan. We told everybody what the plan was, so I don't think the they don't have a plan is a valid criticism. If someone wants to be skeptical about our ability to execute it, that's TBD, and we're cognizant of that. I think this summer we intend to use our cap space and bring in some veterans. What do you think of that quote from Houston Rocket GM Rafael Stone?
Can he tell us what that plan is then?
I could tell you the plan. I think the plan has been consistent, quite honestly. I think it's been to clear all of the high salaries off this team, trade them for picks, build around young players, build up salary cap space to be in an opportunity to strike via trade or free agency.
I think that Kenny Smith is more on brand with the fact that he might even be responding to Kenny Smith, but I think when you look at it, you look at trying to put the pieces together. You can say you drafted high draft pick pieces. And I think you're right to the standpoint of we had said all along in the plan that we created for the team, which was get Eric Gordon's contract off the books, wait till John Wall's contract expires, take all that cap money and hopefully be in a position to where you can get some very significant free agents to add to what you've built through the draft. But I don't think from the draft perspective, they drafted anybody. I think they fell into their lap for the most part because you look at the top of the draft and you took what was left because everybody was enamored with Cade Cunningham the first year, and you got Jalen. The second year, everybody was convinced you were getting Paolo Banchero, and all of a sudden, the script was flipped, and then Chet went number two, and we didn't know because we thought you were going to end up with Chet, but you ended up whichever of the three was left.
I mean, they did go Jalen over Mobley.
They did, but again, I think that they made it very clear, too, that they don't believe in like a Chris Bosh prototype that was going to be...
But that's making a decision. That's taking a stance. That's not having somebody fall in your lap. Like, that's making a decision.
They could have gone Mobley, you're right. But I think that the dynamic athleticism of Jalen was what everybody said was he was the consensus number two pick. So you took him. But, look, we gave him credit for trading up to get Şengün. I think you lose points when you didn't take a Quentin Grimes and you took guys like Garuba and Josh Christopher who look like they're going to not be on this roster in a couple of years.
Those are late first though. Like I don't know
they
if you
are.
Can I don't know if you can be over like Quentin Grimes in Houston versus Josh Christopher for me.
But I was going with this, when you look at what Sam Presti did in Oklahoma City, he took a Josh Giddey and then he started building guys around him that could play other positions and they could all blend together in terms of the team that they've already started showing signs that they could be. And obviously in some of the trades he made, he ended up also with a young Shane Gilgeous-Alexander, who's an all-star. So they're a little bit further in the developmental process. But it's more about what I'm getting to is just, it can't be just about taking the best draft pick you see on the board, too. You've got to start constructing the team and the nucleus and the buildup at every position.
I just don't think they were there yet. Like, I think that they were going to go one more offseason knowing that their picks are owed to Oklahoma City after this year, that when they really start caring about winning is this offseason. And I think that's always been the plan. I think every single move that they've made kind of corresponds with that being their plan, that they really don't care about winning until this offseason. Because next year, they don't have their first-round draft pick. Now, it's lottery, like it's top three protected, top four protected, something like that, to where they could still have their pick if it lands in the top three, top four. But I believe that this is the offseason they've been waiting for. They get a collection of young players, and there's always an element of randomness with young players through the draft that it's like, okay, we're going to have a top three pick. We're going to have the second pick with Jalen. We're going to have the third pick with Jabari. We're going to try to build around youngsters, hope that those youngsters really pay out. Hopefully that you get a top pick this year. Like, those things are like part of the plan. Like, you're trying to hit a home run in the draft lottery.
But it's also a slippery slope, though, Jeremy, because you're taking these guys and you're right now anointing them as having the potential to be one of the two superstar players on this team.
But I think even before that, though, it was like...
But hear me out, because now you're developing these guys a certain way, right? But now if you have all this money to spend and you go take one or two free agents, which you give max money to or close to it, and you anoint them... Now, do you have the kind of younger players that are willing to adapt, play a role, fit into a system? Or do you have guys that are going to be hell-bent on, no, this is supposed to be my team?
Yeah, I don't think the veterans are going to be getting their stars. I think they're more
real players.
I don't
know, that the market doesn't say that they're going to be available.
And people like, you're talking about Harden, I just don't really see that coming to fruition.
The owners like them.
So, all right, that's it for us. Sorry, Twitchers and Texters. Civil War is over. Unless you want to continue with the wheelhouse, that's fine by us. All right, Joe, thanks for doing all the hard work. I feel like you played us out a little bit early there.
Well, I think because Joe's too busy enjoying Jake Asman's every day try to take over the producer's room camera.
I'm surprised he's still in the booth, being completely honest. All right, Joe, thanks for the hard work, except for the segments that you ducked out. He's Blank. I'm Branham. We'll talk to you tomorrow, Houston. The Wheelhouse is next on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.